have your notes?
Somewhere. Oh, right
there.
I have
my notes.
I have my notes on your sermon from Sunday.
You got double notes?
Well, if we're doing both.
We're doing both.
There's okay. So many Beatitudes to
So
talk
many
about.
Beatitudes. So much to talk about. We've got a lot. So, all right. Welcome.
Welcome.
To Continuing Conversations. I'm Pastor Matt.
And I'm Pastor Dana.
And welcome to another week. Sorry, this edition is later in the week. We're doing this on Wednesday. Usually we record it right away on Sunday, which is kind of nice because it's fresh in our brain and everything. Yeah. But I had a birthday party to run off to, so I thought...
so important birthday
I know.
Party.
I just have so many social engagements all the time.
They just get in the way of your work, don't
It's
they?
Only kids' birthday parties. That's all I'm invited to. That's the fabulous engagements I get invited to these days. It's just toddler birthday parties everywhere. So,
The difference then is we get to talk about two Beatitudes because you preached on Sunday.
Hunger and thirst was Sunday.
About hunger and thirst.
Tonight
and then
was
tonight
mercy.
Was about mercy. So
that's great.
I feel that we will go a lot of different directions with these two. But
yeah.
That's okay.
That's right.
We've been, you know, beating this horse a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
So, mm-hmm.
And we got a couple more weeks of it. So
we got a couple more weeks. So it's
but
good,
people
it's good
keep,
that we have some content.
People keep getting up and saying new stuff. Which is amazing.
Which is great.
Which is great.
And we haven't
I love
talked
this.
A lot about our Wednesday services.
No.
When we record on Sunday, then we're kind of focused on those
on
sermons.
The Sunday. Mm-hmm. Right. It's true. But yeah, it's been very nice. And people have been very receptive to this new thing that we're trying. And it's just been a wonderful experiment. It's great to have other voices speaking to us from the pulpit. It's just great to hear other people's perspectives as well.
Yep.
Yeah, it's been great. And it's nice also for us to get sort of a break in Lent. We're not writing two sermons a week, you know? It's nice. It's good to get other people
involved. A break,
involved.
But also like new ways to think about things and to see how our people are interpreting things. Mm-hmm. Like I'll listen to other sermons or other perspectives, but when it's actually our people, it's like, oh, that's how you are...
Yeah, tonight was Ron and Kathy. Balls put this together, and not the direction I would have taken a sermon on mercy, but that's why we're doing it.
Right?
It
was awesome.
Amazing.
It was so good.
And it was really like an interesting take on it, which is why we do it. That's why we keep telling this story, because there's new ways of interpreting it and listening to it and then telling it to the people. So that was great.
Yep.
I'm very grateful for that. So is there a place you want to start?
I was kind of trying to think about that, and I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't... Do you want to start with Sunday or with today?
I didn't take any notes on Sunday because I was preaching.
True, because you preach. So start with today.
Let's start with today.
I loved... So she told a story about these two men and one inviting one, you know, into his house... comes over late at night, knocks on the door, and well, he could say, you know, how can I get rid of this guy?
Yeah, get out
turn
of
him
my,
away,
yeah, mm-hmm.
get lost. He invites him in, and they hang out for a while. And,
that was great.
You know, just showing mercy in a relational way,
and like, in a real way,
and in a such a concrete way.
Yeah,
like I think mercy sometimes feels like this, like. Out there concept where or such a large concept like I have to be so wronged in some way that it's so gracious of me to show mercy
the way we talk like, about mercy in a church is so wrapped up in what Jesus does for us which is like how do you even begin to wrap your mind around Christ's passion as something that we can attempt in our relationships
and,
you know how can we express that level of mercy
and some kind
no
of
way.
Weird twist in there of like if that's the thing that Christ does for us how I can't do that
no
like
yeah you're
so
almost
that is
resigned
reserved.
To it
yeah so
before you
so
even
this
start.
Like small graspable interpretation of mercy was really interesting
and an easy one sort of to wrap your mind around because you know no we don't always have people knocking at our doors at midnight in fact I was thinking the whole time how would I answer in that situation if someone came knocking at my door? And sadly, because I've got, you know, two young kids, I would probably lock the door. I would be very frightened, you know, to protect my family of like a strange person at my door is not something that I would just invite in. I would be very protective.
It didn't sound like it was exactly strange person.
Right.
So, like,
somebody
they
known,
knew each other.
Maybe a little bit.
So the stranger danger is a real
that
thing.
Part is out of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, in a very tangible way. Speaking right. of a little peek behind the curtain, Kathy told me that the names Tyler and Daryl of the two men in this story are fictional names. She didn't want to use the real
yes.
names. So this is not the actual names of the actual
a real
people.
Story, not real names.
Real
yeah.
story,
yeah.
But the names have been changed to protect the innocent. What is that? Is that CSI or Law and Order or
something? Like
only
that.
The names have
yeah.
been changed. I don't know, whatever. But yeah, different names. But yeah, Tyler
yeah.
opens the door for Daryl. And well, as I sat there thinking about this very easy to digest story about what mercy is embodied,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
would I do the same? In this instance, I don't know. But then again, yeah, if I knew the person, maybe. I don't know. We just
yeah.
we live in a very sad world where I'm not often trusting of strangers. And that is not what we're
yeah.
called to do.
Right.
But, you know, it's just sad.
I was thinking more in a mm-hmm. in just a smaller realm of
yeah.
like, how can we think about mercy in
mm-hmm.
in more daily places
right.
Than how we do, like,
yeah,
than
mm-hmm.
than how we think about mercy.
Right. I saw this great post this week somebody put up talking about, you know, the second coming of Christ and how
mm-hmm.
people talk about the second coming as this thing, especially in the United States these days, evangelicals talk about the second coming and what it's going to look like. And there's all this energy. We have to be prepared and everything. But the writer of the post argued that the second coming is happening every day. Because of what Jesus says in the scriptures, you
right.
know,
well,
of,
yes.
you know, I was hungry and you didn't feed me, you know, I was
yeah.
homeless on the street
yeah.
and you ignored
mm-hmm.
me. Like, Jesus is coming to us on a daily basis in so many little ways that we just straight ignore
well,
a lot
that's,
of times.
That's kind of our Lutheran argument. Too,
right.
Right. Like,
is,
the evangelicals in some groups of them,
mm-hmm.
yeah, want to say this is a far-off concept, like, we will know when
we will
Jesus
know.
Is second coming.
And they
coming
do
come,
it as a way
and...
to insulate themselves, and they can
yes.
sort of ignore the real needs of real people in this
right.
world to
right.
be like, I can't focus on giving to you, homeless guy on the street. I need to
yeah.
go and be prepared. It's like, this is it. It's
right.
happening
right,
right here,
right.
and you might be missing it.
But there's a theological understanding of that, too, that if we are all made in the image of God,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and
right.
with Christ, Spirit-breathed,
mm-hmm.
into us through Christ,
yeah.
then we are little Jesuses
yeah,
everywhere.
Right.
Like
mm-hmm.
that,
yeah. you're
that
doing
is
it
not,
to your neighbor.
It's not this like, oh, cute little concept
mm-hmm.
that someone came up with
it's
about the
real.
Second coming of Jesus. That is actually theologically based
right.
in, you know,
right.
the first verse of Genesis.
Right. Because
like,
as Kathy said, you know,
yeah.
she hearkened back to that famous painting, and I don't know the name of it or who.
Wow, you're so credible in this
I know. but the painting of Jesus knocking on the door.
Yes.
It's a
yeah,
very famous
yeah.
painting. I feel like a lot of churches have it. Jesus
well,
knocking on the door. You
have
a smartphone. Look it
the
up,
the world
Dana.
At my fingertips.
Look it up. Look it up, Dana. Look it up.
I feel lots of pressure right now. Keep
I'll,
talking
I'll
about
keep
it.
Talking while
yeah.
you go. But anyway, that's a great image because it does remind us of the realness of this mercy thing. Which is, if Jesus were to be knocking at our door, how
one.
Would we answer? Yeah, that's the one. What does it say? Is
well,
it Wikipedia?
Visit this site.
Because, yeah, that's what it's all about.
Del Parson.
Del Parson. Shout out Del Parson.
I think.
Is Del Parson...
I mean,
yeah, sure.
Sure, sure.
Sure, Del Parson. If you're still with us, Del, love your painting. I imagine Dell is no longer with us, but that painting has shown up in a lot of churches.
Yes.
I feel like it's a classic one. It's that and that guy who's praying over the bread with the beard. I think the painting is called Daily Bread or something like that. I feel like that painting is everywhere in churches too. But anyway, I digress. But that puts it into a reality, into a daily
mm-hmm.
reality of if Jesus were to knock at your door, would you answer? And I think that painting is supposed to make us think, like you said, about all the people you pass by on a daily basis who are little Jesuses, right? Spirit breathed and everything. If we're all to see our neighbor as as a reflection of Christ, because we've all been created in the image of God, how many people do we on a daily basis just pass right by because we're too busy or we're too focused on ourselves, or like I admitted, just stranger danger. A lot of times it's like, how many people do I want to invite in?
But
it's wild.
Well, and I think the question then to that is like, is there a limit?
Yeah.
It's not realistic for us to find stop every single person
every
who needs help or is poor or sick or standing on a street corner and needs some money. Like, it's not realistic for us to, like...
The good news is we all fall short of this.
Yeah.
And that's why we need Jesus. Right. So, you know, we're not Jesus. We can't be stopping at every person who knocks at our door, metaphorically. But there's grace enough for that.
Well, and this is why the world needs the church, okay?
Yeah, right.
To call back to our stewardship campaign of if everyone in in church or what, you know, all of us are contributing a little bit, like more gets done together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can, as the combined body of Christ, be doing more. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because on a daily basis, we all fall short in plenty of different ways. But together, maybe we can pool our collective good to do something, do something in this world. And speaking of the doing something thing, I loved how Ron and Kathy sort of leaned on this idea that mercy is an action.
Yes.
It's not a passive thing, because a lot of times we do see mercy as like this passive thing, but it's an action. It's something that requires us to act and to move and to do something, because...
I think they specifically said doing something to be compassionate.
Yeah.
Right? Like mercy of compassion.
Right. And they use that great example of Jesus healing lepers and this idea that when Jesus knocks in these ways, this mercy is something that builds bridges.
Yeah.
And to call back to leprosy being this thing that is a social death. You know, if you had leprosy, you were, you could not, you had to go live in your own little colony with other people who had the same disease, because you were unclean in so many different ways. And so you were ostracized from the community. So to be touched by Jesus and healed in that way was a literal bridge back to normal life.
Yeah.
And that, I liked, I really liked the way that they brought that together, because I think that's really powerful to think of mercy as a bridge building tool, a bridge building action. And then she brought in her story, because Kathy works at a liquor store.
I really like this too. That was,
that's
like
a real thing
powerful,
too, right? Her witness of, because obviously working in a liquor store, you see people who are just going to buy a bottle of wine or a, you know, a case of beer or something to make a cocktail, but you also see people who are very much dependent on it and chemically addicted to it, you know. And when you're confronted with those people who are there, and like she said, are clearly not there because they just needed a little bottle of wine for the, you know, this is a something that she sees the same people every day, shift after shift, sometimes multiple times. And it would just be easy to judge that person and go, oh, that miserable drunk, you know, or whatever. But if we can have this mercy action thing as a way to see other people as fellow children of God, you can have more grace with them and understand that they are children of God just like us.
I think, and what felt like the difference between that, between maybe someone with addiction or, I don't know, this choice in like in choosing to drink too much, in... you know, in making bad decisions, in this, like, we are so much more quick to judge and not show mercy than someone disabled or sick or, you know, but there's this human aspect of us that wants to like be like, well, you chose that. Right. Like you're choosing to be miserable. You're picked up this the life. Bottle
and it's like, yeah, it's still a disease though, you know?
But,
right.
But that translates even to like poor, right? Yeah, like if you could just pick yourself up by your bootstraps and get some education and get a good job, like then you wouldn't be on a street corner begging for money.
There's
and,
all that stigma around. Yeah.
And there's so many questions that come with like,
yeah.
Show it before you deserve
mercy. Did you
mercy,
earn it? Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, and so I think that, to bring that back into being a being the cashier working as someone who, I don't want to say enables this, that choice and behavior, because, like, she doesn't have it. She, no. She's
it's just
have
a job.
A stake
yeah, no.
In her, in
no.
their lives.
Right.
But, at, yeah, as someone like kind of playing a part in that,
yeah,
and to step away from the judgment of it would be extremely hard.
Yeah, and to just show mercy and kindness to these people who are just trying to get by,
right?
And that's a beautiful thing that she drew into that because yeah if we see everybody as fellow children of God and you have this mindset of yeah, as that quote goes, there but by the grace of God go I. Mm-hmm. When you see your neighbor who is in a different hard situation, we're all going through things, right, in our life.
Yeah.
Just people have different hard things they're going through, right? If you can see somebody who's in a position that maybe culturally we judge because of whatever, like you said, poverty or drug and substance abuse, we can quickly judge because it's they put themselves in that position, or at least, you know, that's what people say. If you can have
or at
some
least
compassion,
they're not actively getting actively, out of that situation.
If you can
right?
have some compassion and mercy and see them as a fellow child of God and go, well, there but by the grace of God go I. That could be me just as easily as anything else. You
well,
can build that,
that
bridge more easily.
The quote that I wrote down that she said in there was, give people what they need, not what they deserve.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, not what they deserve. Because we all deserve sin and death, and you know, like that's what we all deserve. It's
for
only
the wages
because
of sin is death,
right? Exactly, the wages of sin is death. Absolutely. So we all deserve death. All of us. Nobody is immune to this. But because of what Christ did for us, we can be freed of this. And because of that, because we were loved first, we can turn and show it to others, and do the mercy thing. You know, do mercy. And that's, I love that they took this tact of explaining mercy as an action.
Yeah.
Do justice, love mercy, walk humbly with God, right? It's an action thing. It's not a passive thing that just happens. You got to get up and do it.
Yeah.
And I like it. I like it. It had an action to it. Should we switch gears to Sunday?
I'm looking at my Sunday notes, and I'm like, I just wrote random words.
Just random.
Around.
Yeah.
So I have to be honest and say that it is not the freshest in my brain.
It's all right. I talked about time.
Yep.
I talked about time.
Yep.
And how these two stories that I didn't pick, these are from the lectionary, and it just so happened to fit perfectly with the beatitude that I had for that Sunday, which was those who hunger and thirst for righteousness.
Yep.
And it just so happened to be in the lectionary that it's the parable of the fig tree, which was very helpful to me because that's something you eat. So I was like, hey, that's a way in. And I loved this parable a lot because it is so open-ended. So many parables of Jesus are open to interpretation, but he starts the parable most of the time. Jesus starts a parable with, you know, the kingdom of God is like blank. And then he tells a long story, you know, think of like the prodigal son and the son, he goes out and he spends his inheritance.
That's next week. Shh,
oh,
don't
sorry.
Don't spoil it.
Don't spoil the ending. But there is an ending, right?
Right,
and it's like,
there's
and
a nice bow on
the
end.
End. And that's what the kingdom of God is like. That's most parables.
Right.
Jesus's parable, the parable of the fig tree is, you know, there's this fig tree and this vineyard owner, and he's mad about the fig tree not growing any figs. And the gardener says, yeah, give it another year. and I'll spread some manure on it, and don't chop it down. We'll see what happens in a year. And then it just, that's the last you hear of it. Jesus doesn't circle back to it.
If it doesn't bear good fruit.
Does it get axed, like, or will the gardener come back and say, just give it a little bit more time? Well,
and almost like, how many years has this been happening?
Could be.
This is for 3 years, I've come looking for fruit, but were there 3 more years before that? Were there 3 more years before
The power of all parables is that there's so many different ways to interpret the different characters and the different images, and that's why that's why Jesus taught in parables, that's why we all love parables, is because you can every time peel back another layer and go, oh, I never thought about going this way with it. But this one's even more open-ended because it just ends with no conclusion. There is no finality to it. There's no, and then next year the gardener said this, and then they did, you know, did the fig tree grow any figs the next year? Was it still barren? Like you said, is this the first time they've gone around this circle, or has the gardener been advocating for this tree year in and year out? And and I thought that was very helpful, a way into thinking about the Beatitudes, as seeing Jesus as that gardener who will always advocate for a little bit more time. Because as much as we hear these Beatitudes time in and time out, you know, we can hear this gospel so many times, but do we really live in this way? Do we really believe that those people that Jesus says are blessed are really blessed? Do we really embody this sort of kingdom? No. So
no.
We need the gardener to, you know, step in for us and advocate for us and argue for another year.
So is the connection to the Beatitude then that we should also be like gardeners for justice or for righteousness? Like, blessed are they who hunger and thirst after righteousness. Are those the gardeners who hunger and thirst after righteousness? I don't know.
I didn't go this way because I just ran out of time. You know, there's only so much you can do in one sermon.
I'm just trying to talk about the Beatitudes because that was the assignment.
I know, and I zigged a little bit.
I know.
But I brought it back. But I would say we are not the Jesus would be the gardener. We are the.
But then, if we're mini Jesuses, then we are mini gardeners.
We're little farm hands, maybe spread the manure, or maybe we are the manure. Because in the story,
that's a good connection.
I would say we're the manure, and I did think about this, and that was something that I had to edit out.
This is fun to think about the manure.
We would be the manure spreaders, or the manure itself as that thing that fertilizes the fig tree. So if you see...
So what's the fig tree then?
The fig tree would be those blessed poor, those blessed hungry and thirsty, I would say. And we can be the ones to help.
Oh, and we are the...
We can help spread manure to help them grow in their life. Because, if we truly lived a life believing in what Jesus says in the Beatitudes, then we would be constantly seeking out and searching and finding for those that are hungry and thirsty, and we would be the ones
surround them,
spread manure all over them, and help them to thrive and grow. Just throw some manure at them. I did talk to the kids a little bit about manure, a little bit, because we do have farm kids in the congregation, so. Yeah, people who grow up on farms, they understand manure is money. It smells like money.
You got some pushback on that.
I got some pushback on it. Yeah, a lot of the farmers were like, "Yeah, no, it doesn't smell like money." And I'm like, "But it's it makes you money. You need that manure." So, and we're almost to that time. It's about that time where the farmers around the church spread manure, and this whole town stinks for just a little bit.
Yeah,
but it's a good stink. The people who own the field.
If Jesus is the gardener, we are the manure.
We're the manure.
The fig tree is, they're the those who hunger and thirst. Who is the...
Who's the vineyard owner?
Who's the vineyard owner who wants to cut it down?
This is the hard part, because what I'm compelled to say, I know isn't theologically a great move, would be to say that God is the vineyard owner who comes with the law and says, you're not growing good fruit, cut you down and throw you into the fire, right?
Well, we could just say the law.
Like, the law is then.
That's not God.
Because I don't like painting the picture that Jesus is the loving,
nice
side of God, and Jesus is constantly stepping in and advocating for us.
To God. Because I don't think that's
stands between us and God and goes, no, don't do that to them. Give them more time, because that's not...
that interpretation would come.
But a lot of preachers throughout history have painted the Trinity in this fashion to say God is vengeful and angry, Jesus intercedes for us and says no, he placates the angry God, who is God the Father or God the Creator, and then the Holy Spirit is that thing that advocates for us and keeps us in the true faith, and that's that part of the Trinity. So that's how the three people of the Trinity interact together. But I would say biblically that's not right, and theologically that is kind of hard. That gets into the, you know, if you're going through hard times, is God testing you sort of thing, for, you know, that leads us all down that road, because if that's what God is, I don't know. It paints God as an angry, vengeful, not the way that I see God.
But the way that you could see God.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the, like, this is where teaching the Bible gets so messy, because there are vengeful stories about God.
Yeah. God does some smiting in the Old Testament,
God does
for sure.
Some stuff where we look at those stories and we're like, what? And then kind of the opposite side of that is to say, well... let's just not read those.
And you get all those until you get to the New Testament, and then the happy side of God, which is Jesus, comes out and shows all the love. And it's like, that's not...
Right. That's not exactly...
No, but it's easy to see why people fall into that view.
But there is gospel in... Like, okay, if we're going to say the Old Testament is law and the New Testament is gospel, there's still gospel...
There's gospel
goodness
in the
Old Testament.
Absolutely, yeah.
And...
So yeah, maybe I like your take that it's not God, but it's the law, because it's the law that convicts us, and it's Jesus who frees us because of the action that Jesus does for us on the cross.
Yeah.
So yeah, and that's also why parables are so much fun, because you sit here, like you and I have heard this parable a lot of times, but when you sit down and break down the characters of the parable, it can unveil... You know, reveal some interesting...
You just unveil and reveal.
Unveil, which is reveal and unveil at the same... unveil or reveal. I've come up with a new word. Portmanteau. It's a portmanteau. I smash them together.
Okay, I'm thinking about the vine, the vineyard owner.
Mm-hmm, right. Yeah.
Says... Cut it down. Why should it be wasting the soil?
Mm-hmm.
And how much we attribute that to people who are wasting resources, who are wasting space, who are wasting their lives away, who are the ones not being shown mercy, like, and judgment in
absolutely
in this.
Yeah. So
in,
yeah,
in
that
world.
That's
like
a good connection to what we've been talking about tonight with the mercy piece.
Yeah, I'm thinking about. I don't know, their value in this world, and how we place such a priority on money and success.
Right.
And
And that's the connection to the Isaiah text, which was the other text for Sunday, which is about the big banquet. And it even says... You know, come you with no money, you know, you come get bread and wine and you know, there's nothing needed, nothing expected. Come one and all, even the resident alien in your land is invited to this feast.
Yeah.
And that's the connection between the gospel text of the vineyard owner and the fig tree and the gardener. And then this great banquet where all are welcome and there's plenty for all, for always. This invitation is standing ready for us whenever we want to grasp it. That's the that's the piece that connects them all together, I think, is, and the beatitude too, that yeah. there's this overabundance. So yeah, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, what hope is there? Well, the hope is that there's such an overabundance of love and mercy from mm-hmm. God. Mm-hmm. So that argument that the gardener would year after year extend one more year, yeah. is connects to that extravagance mm-hmm. of the banquet where there's enough for everybody, nothing is needed, and this banquet is for all. So it was cool how it all came together. I'm always amazed by how these things come together, but it worked out, I thought. But maybe it didn't. Maybe it was too much.
I'm thinking about another mm-hmm. connection that...
Yeah.
So is there fear then
mm-hmm.
of the tree...
Yeah.
...that another year won't come?
Yeah. That year might be the last year.
Is that like a made up fear from us that we're like, oh, I've gone too far mm-hmm. down the bad fruit path
right.
that the gardener won't advocate for me anymore?
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. And I think.
Or that the vineyard owner might win out next year. Or that
the vineyard owner might win out.
You know, and that makes me think maybe the vineyard owner isn't, you know, a vengeful God or law. Maybe the vineyard owner is
just
circumstance and or like, others, you know, the pressure that others put on us to be something that we, by no fault of our own, just can't be. If we're going to connect it to the yeah. story of, you know, the yeah. alcoholic at the liquor store or
mm-hmm.
Daryl, who was just looking for some connection. Mm-hmm. We live in this society that's so, you know, like you said, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, mm-hmm. get it together. You know, why aren't you rich and successful? And it's like, where are we hearing all these messages that we have to be all these things all the time?
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe where that fear comes from, that if we're not enough next year, maybe we'll just get cut down and thrown into the fire if we're not enough. Maybe that comes from some external pressures.
And then a fear of loneliness and isolation and like
yeah
that there won't be enough manure around us
yeah there's not
to
enough
sustain like mm-hmm. if that is a sustainable life giver
yeah.
is the manure
yeah
then when that runs out
what happens to us
yeah. what happens to the tree
yeah like, yeah what happens to the tree
and we get kind of this idea from the parable that the gardener has more like
yeah
I'll dig around it and put manure around.
Right.
So
yeah, the gardener's always willing to put in the work. You know, there's plenty to go around, it seems. It's just the vineyard owner that's like, why is this thing wasting soil? It's not producing anything. Get rid of it. What use is it to anybody? So to hear that, to tie into tonight's message, to hear that mercy, that action.
Yeah.
That action of the gardener is there, yeah. willing. Yeah. There's plenty to go around. There's an overabundance, to connect to the Isaiah piece,
mm-hmm.
and there's Jesus who will do the work, you know, because mercy is an action. It's not a
right.
passive thing. There's
right.
there's action to it. He yep. will dig around it, spread the manure. Like, that's hard work,
mm-hmm.
and Christ is ready to do that for us, to do that work, and we don't need to bring anything. It's grace that we all receive as a free gift. You know, we need nothing to receive it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay, so I know there are technical definitions of both of these, but
yeah.
you talked about grace in mm-hmm. the fig tree
yep.
A lot, and then we talked about mercy today.
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference between those?
About grace and mercy?
Grace and mercy.
They're certainly used interchangeably.
They are, but I feel like grace comes a little more, grace feels a little more accessible, maybe?
Yeah.
Or like...
Yeah, maybe. And mercy is
feels
more...
a little more holy, almost. Like,
yeah.
reserved for bigger things.
Yeah, mercy.
Mercy.
Yeah, that's a good point. No, I don't know if I had to define one over the other. I think I would just be...
I think theologically there are different, like... Isn't
I'm
there
sure
different
there's something
but
that I
we
learned
them,
in seminary
yeah.
at one point that's
learned.
No longer in my brain. But yeah, mercy and grace, they seem to be two things that you use in the same sentence in the same way and go mm-hmm. hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe mercy's the action and grace is the outcome.
Oh.
Maybe that's the way I would see the biggest difference. Because, yeah, they do go hand in hand, but mercy is kind of the action, the merciful action that is brought to you in the hour when you need it.
So you're receiving the action.
Yeah. Of mercy. And then the grace is what you get as a result of the mercy. Is that something? I don't know.
No, that was the same thing. Well...
So it's mercy the outcome is of the action.
Mercy is the verb and grace is the noun.
Right. Mercy's the Advil and mercy is mercy's the Advil.
Okay.
And grace is the relief from the headache that you receive from the mercy pill.
Okay,
analogy? Uh-huh. Off the top of my head, I don't know. There are, theologians much smarter than I that might jump in and be like, that's nonsense. But hey,
nonsense.
It kind of makes sense in my brain.
Write a PhD on that or something. Yeah, I could.
I don't want to, but
I could. You need to make your arguments for that.
I do, yeah. And I'm not going to.
Did I tell you mm-mm. that I made a bet with a friend mm-hmm. that if Duke wins the national championship.
Oh, yes, you mentioned this.
I did. I have to apply for their PhD
if they
program.
Win the championship.
Actually, their Demon program looks kind mm-hmm. of okay.
Does it?
Uh-huh.
Even though you
and
hate Duke because
I know,
you went to Kansas.
I can't go to Duke.
You were a Jayhawk.
So we need them to lose.
It's funny that it's called Demon, the Doctor of Ministry.
Demon,
and they're the Blue Devils, aren't they? Are they not?
Wait.
Whoa, you'd be a Blue Devil working on your Demon.
With Kate Bowler,
which would be very cool.
Shout out Kate Bowler.
As of today,
listen to our podcast.
Yeah, I would love that. As of today, the 26th, Duke is still in it.
Yeah, they are. Sweet 16.
When does that start?
They either play tomorrow or Friday.
Oh, my gosh. I do not approve of this. Can I just say that right now? I don't want you going anywhere.
What am I
supposed to do?
It's a hybrid program.
Okay,
I've
so you do
looked
it
at
online.
It.
Wow, you're already prepared for this. What would you do for your Demon?
I don't know, because, okay, so Demon is
don't
more...
take my Advil, mercy,
pill, no,
grace
a,
idea.
Because a Demon is more applicable and practical to being a...
Gotcha. It would have something to do with ministry.
Pastor. Yeah, it would have to be some kind of project or something.
So my bad analogy about a pill and mercy and grace is safe? Oh, thank God.
Probably safe. You can keep that one.
I better mail it to myself. And then that way I think it's protected under copyright law. If I mail an... Isn't that
really?
True? I think
if
you mail
we'll
an idea...
the lawyers in my life.
Because it goes through like a federal agency, there's some sort of... There's something about that. That if you have an idea that you want to protect, mail it to yourself and then you get some sort of protection. I don't know.
Federal agency.
Ask your brother. He's the lawyer. I don't know anything about this.
He is not the lawyer. He's in law school.
Okay, so he's not there yet. Yeah. So if he gets his law degree, you kind of have to get your Demon, right? You kind of have to.
Okay,
if
so
you guys are going to be that competitive.
I mean, yeah. I need more.
You need more titles.
More status than
you need
him.
More student loans is what you need.
Also that, yeah.
What?
They play tomorrow night.
Who are they playing against?
Arizona.
All right. Let's go Zona. My mom went to Arizona.
Oh.
So I'm rooting for Zona, not only because I don't want you to spend all your time trying to get a doctor of ministry, but also because my mom went there. Shout out Lynn.
Well, shout out Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
Does she listen?
Sometimes I think.
Okay, well,
I'm
going to
not tell her and
see.
Yeah,
and see if she... My mom has never...
Can she make it 38 minutes in?
The times that we have shouted out my mom, she has mm-hmm. never commented on.
So she's not listening.
She tells me she listens, mm-hmm. and then she didn't comment that we shouted
that you shouted her out.
So.
All right. Yeah. Well, come on, moms.
come on, moms.
Let's get it together.
Who's supporting us if not our moms?
Yeah.
Come on.
Come on. We're doing this all by ourselves. Right.
Anyway, we got off track there.
Yes, we did.
Grace and mercy, Advil, mm-hmm. and relief from your...
If people out there who know things about grace and mercy, please tell me how wrong I am. And then we can bring it to the next podcast and talk about it. And I'll do some mm-hmm. I'll do some research for the next podcast.
I mean, we don't have to. We don't owe them anything.
But I am also interested because this is one of those questions
yeah.
that I would like to have a coherent answer.
Probably.
Not whatever I said. Yeah. It was a lot. I felt myself as I was writing the sermon being like, these are a lot of different things to tie together.
That it was. And you did a lot.
I thought, you know, I'm like, I think this all can work together. But sometimes it's better to just go with one thing and go deeper on it than to try to do a mm-hmm. lot all in one. But I every time fall victim to it. It's like, ooh, I want to say this and say yep. this and say yep. that.
Well, and this I'm excited. Is where we've talked about sermon writing before. Mm-hmm. You know, it is easy to write a 25, 30-minute sermon.
It's much easier to write a long sermon.
So easy. You can throw everything in there.
We've been talking for 40 minutes.
Yep. And
about what? I can just talk all day.
Right. We could talk all day.
I could talk to a wall.
The hardest part is getting it down to 10, 15. Yeah. Like
because
that,
then it has to be good. It has to be a good 10, 15.
And you can't cut out stuff that actually makes sense. Like,
right.
Then the stuff you leave in needs to tie together
with the other stuff. So
it is a challenge. People are like, oh, you only have to write a 10-minute sermon. No, that's harder.
No, a 10-minute sermon is tough. You gotta make it work.
Yeah.
Brevity is tough.
Okay. Also, last shout out to Kathy because she pulled me aside before before this and was like, "Do you get nervous before speaking?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I get nervous.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm a human. Yeah,
right. And
I've got a pulse.
And I applaud people doing this. That
I
is
do too.
Scary because there is a vulnerability about getting up in front of a crowd and talking. Like, okay, yes, we do it, and we're getting comfortable with it.
For sure.
I would never say that I'm 100% comfortable all the time doing that kind of thing. And I hope there's a little bit of healthy like nerves. That
I think it's a good thing. Gives you a little shot of adrenaline. Helps you focus. At least that's
and
the way
so,
I view it. So,
But there's a vulnerability that
Absolutely.
Comes with that you are exposing yourself
you're getting
to a
out
group
there.
Of people.
You have to share part of your heart. And that takes a lot. So, shout out Kathy and Ron who helped write it with her.
Ron helped write it.
And I she stopped me afterwards. She didn't talk to me before, but she stopped me afterwards and said, thank you so much. That was so great. Yeah. What a great practice that is. And she was like, it really opened myself up to think differently about this whole thing. And she's like, I really enjoyed doing it. So I was glad to hear
that.
Yeah. I'm glad. And that was kind of the sentiment from Judy and Mark too. They both shared something along the lines of like, that was fun. Thank you for asking me. And I'm just glad how much people have gone headfirst into this thing and they've each taken it in their own different direction and it's great.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that has been really good to get other voices up there, to get other stories out into our community that, like, we're not the only ones as pastors who can preach, who have stories, who, like, can say a word. And,
Absolutely.
You know, this is part of a church. This is part of being people of God, too, is that we got to tell some stories
a little bit. The Lutheran faith is not one that often has... you know, like what the Baptist church would call like an altar call.
Mm-hmm.
That's a common thing in the Baptist faith is they have an altar call where it's just open mic. Who wants to come up and give their testimony that week? And people come up and say all sorts of stuff. And you got to be just sort of open to whatever people are going to get up there and say. But the Lutheran church does not do that very often. Open up the floor to the people. The Lutheran Church relies heavily on the ordained pastor or deacon to get up there and give a curated sort of message. But I like these opportunities to get people to speak because people have really incredible stories and we don't often get to hear them. And that's sad.
And what's the point of us just talking at you all the time? Mm-hmm. And instead of, and we talk a lot about relationships and building connections. And how are you ever supposed to do that if you never get to know the people or see them in action? Or, like, not that it's about producing good fruit, but but just as a community. Like
to build up communities.
To build up that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've liked this a lot.
Yeah.
We can do this more. I think that would be great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's other opportunities to do this kind of stuff. Yeah.
I think so, too.
And doesn't need to be all white robes and
magic
hands
right.
all the time.
Magic hands. Yep. Well, you got anything else or should we wrap this thing up?
We should wrap it up.
It's been 44 minutes. So thank you all so much for listening to Continuing Conversations. And we want to continue this conversation. If you have any thoughts you want to share, you've got a better analogy than the Advil thing I said about grace and mercy, let us know. Shout us out on Facebook and Instagram. Write us an email. Give us a call. Drop by a church. And we'll continue this conversation.
Call Kate Bowler. Tell her to listen.
Tell her that we've got a podcast. Call my mom and Pastor Dana's mom and tell them that we talked about them and they should be listening. We're glad that you listened. Thank you for being a part of this. And we will see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.